Welcome to part two of our deep dive into the different pieces of a typical destination wedding ceremony. And I hope with all the detail, we haven't scared you off yet. This is a great opportunity to expand your business and to bring in more revenue in the new years as a ceremony planner who's certified, because you'll be doing this work in addition to your travel work. But you'll find that there's a lot of overlap, and the skills you're using to put the trips together will translate directly into organizing these ceremony components. So thank you again for going through this program. All right, we got up through decor in the last session. Now we're starting with flowers. And I'm going to sigh here because in talking to members and getting information to put these classes together, we talked to a lot of our high volume members who do a ton of destination wedding planning all year round, and they shared almost to a person. Flowers can be one of the most challenging and disappointing areas for couples and ceremony planners because they can be expensive, they can be disappointing, and they can just really put a bad feel on otherwise what would have been an amazing ceremony. Let's talk about the basics. Most resorts and cruise lines will have pre-selected flowers as part of their basic wedding packages. A lot of times it is the basics. It's the bridal bouquet and the groom's boutonniere. Sometimes it's a few extras like a centerpiece for the altar where the couple and the officiant will be standing. But many times that's it. That's the basic inclusion for flowers. So your couples have a choice. They can accept that as is, stick with just those things. They can ask to customize those things, or they can add on, you know, extras. So they might take the basic package, the bridal bouquet, the groom's boutonniere, but they might add more boutonnieres and bouquets for the bridesmaids and the groomsmen, for example. Or they can actually bring in an outside vendor florist to do as many florals as they want. Sky's the limit depending on their budget and the timing. So for your purposes as the planner, here's a good checklist to talk to your couples about in really getting them to nail down, whether it's the vision board, your legal pad, however, what they really want for the flowers at their wedding ceremony. There's the ceremony decor. So the decor for the actual ceremony layout where everybody's going to be sitting. So that can be flowers along the aisle where everyone's going to be walking down the wedding party. It can be that altar centerpiece if it's not included. The arch or the canopy at the front where the couple and the officiant will be standing. Sometimes there are flowers woven into the arms, the legs, I guess I should say, of the arch or the canopy itself. And you can go from there. There can be even more flowers at the ceremony, as well as, of course, the reception. I like flowers on the bar or flowers on the tables at the reception. So there can be additional wedding party flowers, the boutonnieres or corsages, for the groomsmen and the bridesmaids, and even the parents might have corsages and boutonnieres. And then again, the reception itself. And if there are other events, if there's a rehearsal dinner, if there's a farewell brunch, there might be centerpieces or other flower decorations for those events. Now, here is the one thing to talk about for sure with your couples. Flowers can easily grow into being one of the most expensive budget items. It's amazing how expensive these can be, and there are reasons for that. You might be surprised thinking about Mexico, the Caribbean being in, quote, the tropics. But there in many big tourism destinations, it's surprising how many wedding flowers are still flown in, or even if they're not flown in, they're certainly trucked in from other parts of that destination. Adds up to the expense. Seasons of the year. You know, there are certain flowers that are popular for weddings that may not be seasonally available 12 months a year. So that those are the factors that really add to the expense of flowers. And a lot of couples will say later in surveys that the money they spent on flowers, they wish they had put into their photography budget instead, for example. So help your couples really go through that checklist on the previous page and decide how many parts of the wedding day do they really want over-the-top flowers at, and where can they be flexible to keep their budgets in check. Encourage them to pick flowers based on starting with what's already in the packages. If they had a choice of wedding package A, B, and C that the resort's offering, can you really help them look at the flowers included in package B, and can they make peace with the flowers that are already part of the package they're paying for? Or can they add on just a few extra things? And what's probably really most important would be the wedding party flowers, so that their groomsmen, their bridesmaids have flowers. And do they really need the aisle flowers, for example, added if they're not already included in package B? And then beyond that, you might have a conversation with them about a big trend that a lot of members really encourage their brides and their couples to think about, and that's artificial faux florals. We're talking, not talking about the plastic flowers that you see in your local dollar store. We're talking about really nice silk florals in many cases. They, from the distance where the guests will see them, they look just as nice as real flowers. But when we're talking about things like altar centerpieces, silk florals for centerpieces like that, even for the tables at the reception, can look just as nice and just as natural as real flowers, but much less expensive. Now, your suppliers can, in the bigger destinations especially, can usually get those sourced locally. Sometimes artificial florals can be rented, which can save your couples quite a bit of money. They can also be rented back home and brought, shipped in to the destination. But then remember, if they're rented, they've got to be shipped back home. Another issue with artificial flowers is if they're bought in the USA or Canada and shipped down, you want to help your couples and the supplier, we're talking about the on-site coordinator, figure out what happens to them after the ceremony. The worst thing environmentally to happen would be for those to be trashed. So can the resort take those in and just put those in inventory so that another couple down the road might be able to use them? Again, make sure they're not just tossed in the trash afterwards. That's a disaster for everybody. If you are working with the in-house packages or an off-site vendor, make sure you're getting photos first of the venue itself, really current photos of the venue where the ceremony is going to take place, so your couple can envision where the florals will be placed. You really don't want an outdated venue photo. So they get there and they are disappointed, the couple that is, with where the flowers are placed. You also, it's absolutely okay to insist, whether it's the in-house supplier, wedding coordinators, people, or off-site vendors, that you get recent photos of past floral arrangements they've done, especially when it comes to things like the bridal bouquet. Very important to get pretty current pictures of the recent bridal bouquets and other floral arrangements they've done. If it's the altar centerpiece, that's not such a big deal. If it's the bridal bouquet, it can be a disaster. If the real bouquet they get when they're about to walk down the aisle looks nothing like the picture they were given 6 months earlier. Great tip here, repurpose florals. If you're buying real flowers for the altar centerpiece, and if you're buying real flowers for the altar flowers, those can easily be picked up once everybody's walked out of the ceremony, and you or someone on staff at the resort, or if it's an offsite florist where they're there on site helping, that's picked up and then taken as is and used at the reception. Or a lot of times those can be taken apart and put back together quickly to look new for the bar decorations or flowers as centerpieces on the reception tables. And then many times the bride or the groom will ask for their boutonnieres, their bridal bouquet, to be preserved. There are ways to save those flowers for longer periods of time. And if they want that, check ahead with the supplier's coordinator, the on-site coordinator, and the off-site florist if there's someone there on site. There are ways to preserve those flowers, but you want to get that set up, get that requested and set up and confirmed well in advance. Don't ask for it on the day of the ceremony, or it's not going to happen. A few more flower tips, just background for you. We're not trying to turn you into a florist, but you may get questions from couples. So in case you do, the first part of the slide, we went through the packages for the top five, in our opinion, the top five or six suppliers that do the most destination weddings. And we pulled out listings of what flowers are in their packages. And this was the list. And there's a great bride's article here. If you have couples that are searching for red flowers or blue flowers, this article is a great reference that will help you work with your florist. All right, music. Again, let me stop here and just say, in these two classes, we're trying to cover the waterfront, give you a lot of detail in the slides, especially. You notice there are not a lot of pretty pictures in the slides. We want these slides to be references for you because you're going to get questions about these things, but we're not trying to turn you into musicians or florists. We just want you to have some background here as you work with your couples, and especially as you're talking with offsite vendors and the on-site coordinators, so you know what you're talking about. So with music, it's typically the music that needs to be handled and confirmed for a destination wedding ceremony. There's the prelude music as the guests are being seated, the processional music as the wedding party, including the bride or the couple, if it's the same-sex couple, will be walking in. The processional music for the wedding party, but then the entrance music, which is for the bride. And then the recessional music as everybody's walking out. So that's for the ceremony. Now there's also the reception. It's amazing how some couples will put a lot more thought into the reception playlist than they will the ceremony playlist. But these are some of the typical things that happen at a reception. Again, it's a destination wedding with lots of freedom. If they don't want to do a first dance, if they don't want to do the father-daughter and the mother-son dance, that's all okay. They can pick and choose. But this gives you, as the planner, a checklist to present to them when you're talking to them. What do they want to do at the reception so that you can cross things off or add something on if they want to do it? If they're not Jewish, but they just love the idea of the Horah dance, the chair dance, it's their destination wedding. Let them add on with, as long as they're not culturally insensitive, which I think most people would agree, the chair dance is not necessarily culturally insensitive. Now, to play that music, they do have three basic options. Pre-recorded, the on-site coordinator can usually provide pre-recorded playlists, or it's very common for the couple to work up their own playlist on something like Spotify and then tell the resort this, or the cruise ship, here's where you find on Spotify our wedding playlist that we put together. They might even bring like an MP3 or MP4, I should say, type player. And some of them will bring their iPhones and say, here's the playlist, plug this in. DJs are also, of course, very common. The venue can book them, or they can be booked off-site, and once in a while, the couple will even bring in their own DJ. Live musicians and bands. Then you can book them. They can be booked as an outside vendor, or once in a while, they're actually flown in. If it's a really well-known band that the couple loves, their favorite band. It's all based on their budget. A couple of tips here. You want to ask the couple to really put some thought into if they are doing their own playlist, especially. But if they want to think about the songs they want played and the feel, you know, don't have all fast songs. They want to mix in some slow songs and Make sure there's songs in there for the older people in the crowd. You get the idea of what to do with playlists. And trust me, they've done their own searching for this. They've already been on ChatGPT doing research for the playlist. Tips for you to remind them about, though. They probably do want to list a short list, especially if it's a DJ or a band, songs that must be played. It needs to be a short list, three or four or five maximum, songs that they really want the band to, or the DJ, or on the venue's pre-recorded playlist. They want these songs included. Also, songs that must never be played. If there are raunchy songs, off-color songs, types of musicians that should not be played, there needs to be a never be played list of songs and musicians that you would give as the planner to whoever's doing the music. If they are bringing live musicians in, you want to remind them and maybe do it yourself, check reviews. Check Google and Yelp and other places for, Wedding Wire and the Knot reviews. Ask the band or the DJ for references yourself. Even if the couple has picked them, you want to try to go in and ask them for references that you, as the planner, can pick. Also, you want to ask to look at their contracts and what are called riders, which are written down lists of things they require to have at the venue. And this, you've seen these where, the big musicians will ask, no blue, no brown M&Ms in the room where they're getting ready to perform. But this is serious stuff. This is, are they asking for a lot of extra equipment, for example, at the venue that's going to cost the couple? And the couple may not realize this because they glanced at the contract. So ask to see the contract as the planner and as your travel advisor hat, put that on. Read through the contract for them and make sure they understand what they're signing. Try to do that before they sign it, of course. Ask the venue again just to reconfirm, what are the rules for music? Is there after 10 p.m.? Does the DJ have to shut down? And then there are questions that come up sometimes. Does the couple have to get a license, like a BMI or ASCAP license, to play music? Typically, as the answer is, as long as it is their private wedding ceremony and reception, they're not opening to every guest at the resort to drop in. And they're also not charging their guests. It being open to the public and charging people are the two factors that might mean they might have to really get a license. A lot of times, the resort or the cruise line has already paid for a broadcast license that covers this question. So if you get this question from your couple or a guest who thinks they're a lawyer, that's usually the answer. All right, photos. By far the most critical thing you'll work on, if you can believe it, for the ceremony. Not the officiant, not the flowers, not the reception food even. It's the photography. It's the number one thing that couples have said in surveys afterwards. If they could pick one thing they wish they had spent more money on, it's the photography. And if it doesn't go well, it's a disaster because it really cannot be redone, right? I mean, if the reception food's terrible, you can complain, and the venue, the resort, or the ship can scrounge around and find some caviar to bring out. But photography, once it's the ceremony is over, can't do that again. So there are several ways to set up the photography for the destination wedding. The venue is going to have a photographer. And again, we say venue here, we're talking about the resort or the ship. You can hire a locally based photographer, or the couple can fly in their own destination photographer from back home or from somewhere else outside the destination. So the three options. You, as the planner, are going to be involved in this. At least just to confirm that they have thought about some of the things we're going to cover on the slides here. So again, remember that spectrum we talked about, part one. In some cases, the couple's going to handle all these details, but hopefully there are things you'll pick up from the slides here that you can mention to them, remind them about. This proves your value for the planning fee you're going to be charging them. I promise you, there are some things on the slides you're going to remind them about if they insist on handling all the details. And they're going to say, "We never thought about that. Is that a thing?" Does that really happen? So use these slides, pull things out in here, and not just in the initial consultation, but throughout the timeline when you're working with them, once in a while, just pop in and say, I know you're thinking about getting your photographer set. Have you thought about these things? So more things to think about. Ask them to really think about the style of photos that they're looking for. Don't just pick a wedding photographer because the resort recommended them, or the maid of honor said, this photographer did my wedding and did a great job. Make them think about, do they really want traditional wedding photos? Do they really want to feel more like Instagram documentary type photos? Do they want black and white photo? There's some couples that want black and white wedding photography, or they want a mix. Ask them to think, you know, look through Pinterest, look through wedding magazines. What type of photo style do they want? And then beyond that, it is absolutely okay to insist on seeing a portfolio from the wedding photographers they are thinking about. Don't work with a photographer who won't provide samples, but look on their website and ask even for like portfolios. What's a sample of the portfolio they've given a past wedding couple? And then it is also absolutely okay to sit down with the couple or for them to sit down on their own and think of a list of required photos. A photo with the parents, a photo with their best friend from childhood, a photo with all their wedding party, and then a photo with just the bridesmaids and the bride. There are lots of places online to find photos like this. This is a sample linked that we offer members, and you're welcome to use it and give it to your clients. But giving the photographer a photo list, and it doesn't hurt also when the day of timeline is done, like the day of coordinator, when you're working on that with the on-site coordinator, what's going to happen at 9 a.m., 12 noon, 2 p.m.? The ceremony is going to start at 5:05, 5:15. Give the photographer that day of timeline so they know what's going on and they know where to be for different photos. This, again, remind your clients of all the things they can save money on: flowers, music, using a Spotify playlist instead of flying in the band from their hometown. The place not to skimp is wedding photography. Now, a few more tips here. If they are using an outside vendor, not the resort's photographer, they want to check the pricing details carefully. So a couple of things to think about here. When someone's being brought in locally from the destination offsite, or it's someone who's being flown in completely outside the destination, check what their rules are, the photographer that is, about charging for travel expenses. Are you making their travel arrangements? Many times the photographer is going to say, I'm going to charge you $1,500 for travel, but I'm booking my flight. I'm booking my transfers and so on. You're probably going to handle the room maybe as one of the comps for the group. But sometimes the photographer will say, you let me know what the rate's going to be, but I'm going to book the room. It gets a little dicey, especially if they are kind of full of themselves. A lot of times they'll want to book these things because they want to pick the flight that doesn't make them bone tired. So it's not like the couple insists on booking them on a red eye and they arrive the morning of the ceremony. That's kind of sometimes why the photographers will say, I'm going to charge you $1,500, but I'm booking the flights and the transfers. And that's okay. Just talk to them and work out. Just make sure you understand why they're doing it and you have a handle on what the money's being spent on. Are they going to charge their time, like billable time? So if their rate is as an example, $1,500 a day for photography services on the day of the wedding, are they also going to charge $1,500 for their time, billable time that they're flying, if that makes sense? That's okay. It's done a lot. It's very common, but just make sure you understand that because the couple may not have even thought about that. Basically, what you want to do is read their pricing chart and their contract just really carefully. so you understand the details of what they're charging. And then also check in the destination locally for any laws or required work permits. Usually the work permits come into play for offsite vendors who are charging for their services, like a photographer. And then if it's an offsite vendor or even the onsite vendor, like the resort's photographer, insist on seeing the fine print of what their service agreement is or what they're charging and promising as part the photography services that are included in the resort's wedding package. We talked earlier about that cruise ship example, the services of a photographer. Here, you want to make sure, even if it's the resort's photographer that's included in one of the higher end packages, check the fine print, what's included. Sometimes, for example, the resort's package B out of the three wedding packages, and your couples picked package B that includes the photography. It'll say something like, quote, highlights photography package, quote unquote. But there's no detail. How many pictures, how long is the photographer going to be there at the ceremony taking highlight pictures? How many prints will be included in that? Or is it all digital? Are there proofs provided? Or does the couple have to pay extra to be able to see proofs first? Watch the package, especially with the included photography, the on-site photographer. Get all the details. How many actual living human beings will be there taking photos? Is it one person or a couple? How long are they going to be at the ceremony? Will proofs be available to the couple? The deliverables, whether they're off-site vendor photographers or on-site, what's going to be delivered? Is it all digital? Is it prints? Can it be both? How many photos? What are the formats? All of those details. And last but not least, the delivery time. Will the proofs be available 2 days after the ceremony so the couple can look at them? How long after that will the actual digital and or print photos be delivered to the couple? It can be days, weeks, or many months. So this is photography is so important, and here is where you can really prove your worth. If you talk the bride out of having roses back in the floral section, that's not a big deal. If you can really show here how detailed and dedicated you are to making sure that the couple get their money's worth for the photos, they're going to love you forever. So I'm starting to take some time here, but this is so important. A few last minute things here. If they want drone photography, talk with both the photographer and the venue to make sure that you know what the photographer is going to do. Is he going to operate the drone while he's also trying to take wedding ceremony pictures? There needs to be a second photographer there running the drone. And then make sure that the supplier lets you know about any restrictions on drones. There are many public beaches in certain destinations, for example, that do not allow drones. They don't care if you are there for a wedding. So check that with both the photographer and the supplier's coordinator. And then if you are dealing with a couple and just a general question to ask the offsite photographers especially is, what rights do the couples have to use the photos? You know, if they want to come home and go out to Destination I Do magazine or Brides magazine and submit their photos to get maybe mentioned, or if they want to submit it to Wedding Wire and The Knot, are there any restrictions on that? If it's a really fancy photographer, sometimes there are restrictions where the clients, even though they paid the photographer for the pictures and they're not allowed to use, they don't have the copyright to submit those to places like Brides Magazine. It's not a big deal, but just be aware of that. It's a simple question to ask the photographer. Okay, now to videos. Next, most important, of course, along with photos, you're going to have the same options as with a photographer. Use the on-site videographer that the supplier is going to provide. Hire an off-site outside vendor who's based in the destination, or fly in a videographer. So a couple of things here that are different from the photos. You want to ask your couple how they, the style, just like with photos, Do they want this to be like telling a story, like from start to finish? So it would start maybe with some pictures of the couple meeting and their engagement photo shoot that are kind of inserted in the video, and then it morphs into the wedding video. Or do they want it to be more like just video shots of just the ceremony itself? Have them be really specific about the video feel they want. It's okay here, just as with a photographer, to give the videographer a shot list. A little extra here, along with the shot list, it wouldn't hurt to give the videographer a list of wedding VIP guests that you want to make sure, if the photographer is doing, the usual, hey guests, look in the camera and say something to the couple. This is more important maybe than with the photos. If the videographer is going to do something like that, make sure that if the couple wants their mom and dad, their parents, and the maid of honor, best man, to do video clips like that where they're talking into the camera, give a list like that to the videographer. Again, you might look at this on the slide and say, John, I can't even believe we're talking about this. I'm more worried about is the food out at the reception. Listen, these are the little things you can put. You don't have to chase down the videographer and do this yourself. These are tips you can pull off the slides and put in a tip list to give your couples. And it proves your credibility, your worth for the nice hefty planning fee you're going to be charging them for being the ceremony planner. Don't overlook these little bitty things because it really shows your value. As with the photographer, check the contracts and any riders that the videographer might have, and the pricing. One thing for sure is with sound quality. It's common for a lot of inexperienced videographers to just use the mics built into their video cameras. And sometimes, if it's a windy day, if it's at a resort where there's a lot of noisy background with other guests, find out if they are using professional sound equipment like the little wireless clip-on mics so the sound quality is excellent for the final video. As far as what the couple's going to get, for photos is pretty understandable. It's digital images and maybe some prints. Videos, a lot of couples may not really know what to ask for. Don't leave it up to the videographer. Check what's in the pack, the pricing for the what's going to be delivered, the deliverables. And think about recommending to couples that they ask for two videos. One is a longer video, 20 minutes plus, that's really for their friends and family, like the immediate friends. And it's for the couple really to have as the keepsake. But then for all the other guests who came, as well as the guests who didn't make the trip, it's okay to ask for like a 3 to 5 minute shorter video. And that's the one you give out to the friends and family who aren't going to get like the family version of the video. It's also okay to ask the videographer to edit down like a 1 minute social media video. And that's the one that goes out on Instagram and Facebook and so on. Last thing about videos is also it is very common and included usually in pricing with videographers for weddings to ask for the raw footage. So that later on, if you wanted to edit it, if the couple that is wanted to have it edited a different way, they have the raw footage. And usually there's not an extra charge for that because the videographer has it already. Last thing on videos, live streaming. Many suppliers do have options for a separate camera to be put in place that will capture the essence of the ceremony, especially the vows, the walking in, the entrance, to be captured live, streamed over the internet. So people who are at home who could not make the trip can log on their computers at home or their phones and go to a certain web address and actually see the ceremony. There's an extra charge for that usually, unless it's included in like the higher end packages. Ask the suppliers about this. There are offsite vendors who can do this, starting with your videographer, who can probably help you do this. And even the photographer, who might not be prepared to do the whole videography, might be able to help you do the live streaming part. Okay, wrapping down here, we're getting to some of the smaller issues that are still important. And boy, is this one important. On the morning of the wedding, and sometimes even a few days earlier, if there are some earlier pre-ceremony events that are part of the wedding trip, but especially the morning of the big day. Typically, brides and bridesmaids will have hair and makeup sessions. A lot of times, the resort or the ship can provide this using the stylist and the makeup artist who are part of their spa staff. It is also common for the bride and bridesmaids to decide to bring in off-site, outside vendors to do this. In the bigger destinations, Cancun, Montego Bay, these folks are very easy to find. And your on-site wedding coordinators can even refer you to these outside makeup artists and hairstylists. They know them, even if they don't use them. So they can recommend some people. And our Facebook group can give you some leads too. Typically, in this case, you might be asked to help find an outside vendor or to just help confirm with the on-site coordinator these appointments and that there's going to be a private room in the resort spa. Or maybe there's a separate room. It's not part of the spa, but it's a separate room set aside near the ceremony venue where the vows are going to be said. So you might, that's the limit of your involvement is making the appointments, reconfirming the appointments like a week out, maybe even the day before, just reconfirm nobody's forgotten about this. As far as the etiquette of who pays, it is a real mix. Sometimes the brides will pay the cost of this for all the whole wedding party, the bridesmaids. Sometimes the bride pays for herself and she chips in for the bridesmaids. Sometimes the bridesmaids are on their own. Make sure the bride thinks about this and that it's clear, whatever the arrangement is, that's clearly communicated to the bridesmaids so it's not a surprise. Again, something you're not charging a service fee to do, but it shows that you are a smart wedding planner. Okay, five or six other issues here. If you accompany your clients, we're going to talk about that in the final lesson separately, but if you do go along with your couples and help them on site, be aware that you may be asked to help set up and even manage other on-site events, rehearsal dinner, do a welcome party for guests, or be in the lobby to hand out welcome gift bags for people, setting up group excursions, which you want to do because that's commissionable. The key point is the second paragraph here. Anything that's not a commissionable excursion that you're asked to do, make sure it's part of your ceremony planner planning fee. It's part of your client agreement. Be careful about, oh, Jenny's here already helping us with the ceremony. She won't mind putting together the bachelorette party. I'm sure she's a nice travel agent. She doesn't mind doing this. You do mind doing this if you didn't charge for it. So be wary of that and talk to your couple in advance. If you are planning to accompany them, I will talk about this in the final lesson. In your agreement that covers your going on the trip with them, it will spell out specifically the events you are managing. And if it's not on that bullet point list, then you're not managing them, and that's an extra fee. We have a member, Lisan, who's come up with this catchphrase that many of us have adopted. Sounds like an invoice to me. So if it's not part of your agreement for going on the wedding trip and doing certain things on the day of, then it's an extra fee. It should be at least. Okay. Wedding attire. Usually there's not a tuxedo involved in many destination weddings. There could be. If this is a destination wedding in Europe, maybe they're going to pack along their tux and it's an upscale wedding. But typically it's more the wedding, the bride's dress. That's a question here, are the bridesmaids' gowns? And again, there's a spectrum. There are brides who say, look, everybody just wear white. Bring your own clothes you've got. Don't buy anything separate. It can be a dress, it can be shirt and pants, whatever, wear, just make it all white. The other end of the spectrum is we're all buying sand-friendly, beach-friendly bridesmaids' dresses, and they might be all the same color and et cetera. So the key things here is you can do some Googling and just get some tips about how to pack clothing like this. We're going to work on a tip sheet for DWHSA that we're going to give out to all members, so you can watch for that. But just a couple of things here. The wedding gown itself, if it is a special dress bought for the destination wedding, bridesmaids or especially the bride, it should never be checked. It always needs to be stored carefully in a carry-on bag that is carried by the bridesmaid or the bride themselves. That goes with anything else that needs to be worn that day. So that's jewelry, certain shoes. It all needs to be put in the carry-on bag that's carried on. So there's no chance it's checked and lost. If it's a bought dress, the safest thing to do is whatever. Sometimes the higher end shops can actually provide a carry-on. Or if you take your carry-on into the bridal shop where you're buying the bridesmaid's dress or the bridal gown, take that in and they will pack it for you, and then it's ready to go. You do want to ask ahead for suppliers. If they offer on-site cleaning, not just the usual laundry service that you get when you're a guest in an all-inclusive resort or on a ship, but can they handle wedding dresses, bridesmaids' dresses, and wedding gowns? Steaming and full-blown cleaning. And this is really important. Whatever, even if it's a super casual destination wedding, remind your couples in the invitations, especially all the follow-up instructions, be very detailed and clear on the requested dress code. Using phrases like beach casual or be comfortable, those phrases don't help a bit. They actually hurt. They're confusing. Be really clear, especially for the wedding ceremony itself. If it's going to be beach casual, give examples. For example, so is that beach casual? Is that shorts for the ceremony? Or do you expect them to wear like khaki pants and linen pants? So ask especially for the ceremony. Be very detailed, shorts versus pants or slacks, closed-toed shoes versus sandals and open-toed shoes. Just if the couple really care about this, be really clear about the dress code. Okay, registries and gifts. Many of us already work with registries for clients. There are services like Honeymoon Wishes, which does a great job, honeymoonwishes.com, Honey Fund, I think it's honeymoonhoneyfund.com, that can help you put up a registry. It's probably easier to recommend your couples do a honeymoon registry. Nowadays, destination wedding and honeymoon registries are different than hometown wedding registries. Hometown wedding registries is where we get into buying the toaster and buying the blender, and you actually are buying the blender from the department store, and you're paying the price, and it's a blender that gets packed up and shipped to the couple's house. Wedding and honeymoon, destination wedding and honeymoon registries, typically there are items that people are buying, like a catamaran cruise or a suitcase that's listed on the honeymoon or the destination wedding registry. But in practice, what happens is the couple withdraws the cash balance. So it might be $200 that someone's buying as a gift on the honeymoon registry for one person of the two to go on a catamaran cruise during the honeymoon. But they're not actually buying a ticket on a catamaran cruise. It's cash. And then the $8,000 total, the couple at the end, right before they depart for the honeymoon, they'll take that out as cash. So just having a honeymoon registry is probably the easiest way to handle this. Current etiquette is still a little muddled on this if it's a destination wedding. And I'm going to give you an opinion that is our official opinion for DWHSA that does not always match what the wedding magazines say. We think you should really encourage your guests. They should never ask for or expect gifts to be carried to the destination. That's just a big no-no. Mainly because no guest wants to be paying out of pocket to go on the destination wedding trip and then have to stare at the boxed up gift that they had to carry through security. And it's a constant reminder that you a that the couple asked for a gift on top of the travel expenses. And the best advice to give your couples is that phrase right in the middle there, your presence is your present. We recommend to our members, counsel your clients to be really cautious and conscious of the fact that there are media stories every week of the year about the extreme cost of going on a destination wedding as a guest and the insensitivity of wedding couples planning a destination wedding so it's because it's so expensive now during a time when we might be heading into a recession and jobs are scarce. You get the idea. We recommend that's the counsel, the advice you give your clients. Tell your guest your presence is your present. Now, there are clear exceptions for close friends and family who really know the couple well and just feel like they want to give a heartfelt, significant gift that means something to the couple because it's coming from the bride's mom or it's coming from the sorority sister who's so close to the bride. Or if the guest really feels a connection, that's different. But the rank and file guest should really be encouraged to just show up for the destination wedding, be happy for the couple, go home and feel guiltless about not also having to buy an extra gift. Now, beyond that, many couples want to give guests at the destination wedding a welcome bag or a gift. A lot of times they'll handle that by having a volunteer, like one of the wedding party members, or in your case, if you're accompanying them, you sit at a table in the lobby and welcome the guests as they come in and give the gift out there. If the couple would prefer to have the gift put in the guest rooms, you know how that works. There's a bellman that has to take those around with a list, get the rooms right, and put those in the rooms. And that's okay. But the catch is typically many resorts charge, $5 a room to do that. So just make sure your couples know. Check with the supplier, the resort or the cruise line, and if there is a charge, check not only the charge, but how early in advance do those gift bags or gifts need to get to the supplier so they've got plenty of time to arrange for the bellman to take those around. Okay. Ceremony seating typically follows traditional formats where the guest affiliated with the bride are on the left and the groom's guest are on the right, but it's very informal. There are many destination weddings where everybody just goes and sits. So be aware that's what happens and counsel your clients accordingly. You might be asked by your couple to help dream up a wedding hashtag. There's some advice on the slide here about how to do that. Best advice is the very last part of the slide. If you search online for the phrase wedding hashtag generator, there are all sorts of apps and software programs out there that will help you help the couple come up with lots of options. And again, just a tip that even if you're not asked for this, if in the beginning, when you're beginning the planning process, like the vision board stage, if you ask them, do you think you might want a wedding hashtag? It's not a bad touch to go to the one of these wedding hashtag generators, generate a decent list, and give that to the couple early on, just as a way to show how with it you are. Social media rules. Your couple might ask you, what are other couples doing? And they might ask you to help give out these rules. Like if you're running a Facebook group for the weddings, the destination wedding guest, or if you're sending out like in, the final travel documents, you might want to include some of these with the couple's permission, of course. There are couples who want unplugged ceremonies. They ask the guests, please don't even bring your phone to the ceremony. And so you want to communicate that. Whatever the rule might be about use during the ceremony, especially. And then reminding guests not to post photos on their own social media accounts until they see that the wedding couple just married, that they've posted the first photos. This is a big deal with a lot of couples. and it really has bad feelings if someone jumps the gun. Remind guests to use the hashtag that's finally selected. Recommend to your couples, there are apps and programs out there. All the couples are taking all these pictures and videos on their own phones. There are apps and things that people can download ahead of time, and there are a couple mentioned here, usually a nominal fee. But these programs will let them gather the photos and videos taken during the ceremony and reception times, and then the couple has access to those. So check those out. And then most of all, remind them, if they are allowed to take pictures during the ceremony, please, or even if they're not, but they're prone to like step out in the aisle to watch the bride coming down the aisle. Remember, the photographer, the couple's chosen, the videographer, the couple's chosen, they're working. So just be mindful of where these people are during the ceremony. Don't step in front of them. So it's great to, with their final travel documents, to just put some of these social media reminders in with those. If the couple, again, with destination wedding ceremonies, usually there's not a stern minister at the front who frowns on these things. So unless it is a formal Catholic ceremony, for example, they can personalize the ceremony. And just some examples here, the family Bible, if they already live together as a couple and they have a family pet, and the pet cannot fly to Cancun, of course, it's okay to do things like having a picture of the pet, like in an empty chair by the parents. You know, little touches like that, just remind them they can personalize to their heart's desire as long as it's legal. And if it requires payment, they pay for it. Tossing things, you know, as the couple leaves at the end. Sometimes it's at the end of the ceremony. Sometimes it's at the end of the reception. Many things like rice that are totally acceptable in the States and Canada are frowned upon or even totally prohibited legally in certain destinations. So think about environmentally friendly options. I love the idea of the little bells to ring. That's kind of cute. But just really check for restrictions on this with the supplier. Marriage license and certificate. Even in a symbolic ceremony, check with the supplier to make sure that whatever the ceremony is, legally binding, symbolic, religiously compliant, there ought to be a piece of paper at the end that the couple can take back with them, like after the ceremony, like at the end of the reception, the minister can come around and give it to them. They ought to walk out of the ceremony with some kind of paper, even if it means nothing, it's symbolic. So check with the supplier, the coordinator, and just make sure there are arrangements in place for the couple to get something. And if they're not going to get something, you print up something at your local print shop if you don't have a fancy color printer. Make sure, it's a great touch to make sure that the, and honestly, the coordinator is probably taking care of this, but just check and make sure. It's a great touch for the couple to walk away at the end of the night with something in paper in their hands. Now, if it is a lawfully binding ceremony, it is a good idea for you to help the couple do the research. Your tourism office and your on-site coordinator are the two best sources to find out what is the checklist to have a lawfully binding, legally done ceremony, if that's what the couple wants. Do your best to push them in the symbolic direction. Have them do the city hall ceremony at home. One of our members calls that handling the paperwork at home, which I love that phrasing. But if they insist we got to be legally married under the sun in Cancun, that's okay. But they're going to have to go through the blood test and all that other stuff in Mexico. Help them do the research. Help them talk to the on-site coordinator to get things like the blood test set up and all that. But think about putting in your client agreement with the couple that at the end of the day, it is their ultimate total responsibility to meet those requirements. Put something in that client agreement that protects you if they get down there and they forget about the blood test. They miss the appointment with the nurse who came to the resort to take their blood. And they ignore all the reminders like the phone call. Where are you? We're here to take your blood. Protect yourself so they don't come back later and say, hey, we hired you as our ceremony planner. We didn't get the lawfully binding ceremony because something happened with the blood test. Help them do the research. Help them get with the on-site coordinator to set up the arrangements. You can confirm the arrangements for them. Like, you know, check in with the coordinator, make sure the nurse was double confirmed that she's going to be here, she or he's going to be there on a certain day. After that, though, protect yourself and make sure you talk to them about this and say, I'm going to help you, but I can't walk behind you and push you to the door of the blood exam room. So just protect yourself. And then they should be responsible for getting the marriage license. The difference between the license and the certificate is the license is the legal permission to get married. Let me change slides here. The certificate is the legal proof that they have gotten married. That's the difference. The certificate, the license they will need before the ceremony. And again, the on-site coordinator, 99% of the time, if you're working with them carefully, they're going to make sure that whoever's officiating is really the one providing the marriage license in most cases. Or if the couple has to go into town to go to a registry office to get the license, the coordinator at the resort or on the ship is going to help coordinate all that. That's where the coordinator part comes in. So that they have to get the license before the ceremony takes place. But after it's taken place, getting the final version of the certificate, which might have to have a stamp on it, might have a seal put on it, might have to have other things signed and all this, that can take weeks and sometimes months. You should be ready, even though you're not totally bound to do this, you should be ready to help with the follow-up calls. If somebody's dragging their feet, you should help the couple contact the on-site coordinator. Hey, can you check in with the judge that the resort hired? Where's the certificate? Help us with this. So just be ready to help do the follow-up. Guys, I tell you what, you probably are tired after hearing all this, but I applaud you for going through this certification because I am absolutely convinced there's going to be an exploding. The more AI comes into play, helping, quote unquote, helping couples plan their destination weddings. Some of us are worried about that being competition. I'm not worried about that at all. There are always couples who will churn their own butter for the ceremony and sew their own dresses and go to extreme lengths, kidding, to do their own planning. And they're not our clients anyway. The more AI confuses people, the more couples are going to turn back to us. And if you are there saying, I'm not only an expert travel advisor, I am a certified ceremony planner. I'm going to walk you through all this. I'm going to be there holding your hand. I'm going to be on top of the suppliers because I don't work for them. I work for you. I'm going to be the one beating up the suppliers. I think this training and the certification logo and the certificate you're going to get, that is proof you can show prospects to say, I go the extra mile for you because I've had all this training. And then everything in the slides we've talked about that you pull out, these are reminders all the way through the 12 months, the 10 months, the 8 months before the wedding. You are reminding them of these things. They are going to love you to death. And once they come home, they're going to brag about you to high heaven. Guys, that's, and you're going to make some money. So, remember, we've got one more lesson, and that's going to talk about how to set your fees, how to accompany your groups, the clauses that need to be in your agreements. All that's coming in the final lesson. Thanks for your time.